I begin by saying that arbitration is contractual in nature. And those contracts set forth standards, duties, obligations, all of which are part of the bargain. That is, the bargain that Jensen and Jensen Enterprises entered into when it decided to submit its claims to arbitration, and Mr. Meisner responded, thereby joining that contractual fix, so to speak, of what the rules are and how they're to be applied and what disclosures are to be made. The materiality of the non-disclosure of that 1995 litigation is clear here, because he chooses to disclose a 1992 article, but he omits a 1995 case that is by claim comparison on all fours with the claims asserted by Mr. Jensen against Mr. Meisner. Specific, and the defenses were the same, too. To suggest, as my colleague does, that we can't show an adverse effect, an outcome determinative effect, that was addressed in the Berkhorst case. In Berkhorst, they said presumably, in comparing and contrasting the FINRA rules with the Federal Arbitration Act concerning evident impartiality, they specifically determined that it's presumed to be material. And if material, that failure to disclose, that affirmative non-disclosure in Berghorst was sufficient to trigger the presumption of evident partiality because it was deemed material by virtue of the fact that the arbitration rules of the forum required the mandatory disclosure.
It seems like a world of difference, though, in the fact pattern there where the arbitrator is suing one of the parties to the arbitration for $20 million.
Well, I acknowledge there are factual differences. I don't think the differences, though, control the outcome, because the Berkhorst court clearly found that there had been a material non-disclosure, not initially, because it wasn't his oath and checklist. He filed after his oath and checklist and before the arbitration hearing commenced. But the distinction that of timing and the facts does not change that in the case here, that there was a material, a non-disclosure of litigation, and it's not bridled by it has to be securities related. That much is clear. It's right in the oath and checklist and the arbitration disclosure manual of how they're informed on how to fill it out to disclose it if there's any question at all. And it wasn't disclosed at all. And indeed, if he would have started disclosing that he had such claims, he wouldn't have been picked as an arbitrator. We would have struck him. It was a 2-1 decision. Therefore, it is outcome determinative. That same result was found in Berghorst. That is outcome determinative because it was a 2-1 decision and he was one of the votes. So, therefore, it was outcome determinative. Likewise, it's outcome determinative here. You can be guided by, suggest you can be guided by, your decision can be informed by Berkhorst, which is on all fours. There's no temporal limit, we pointed out in our opening and reply brief, in terms of what must be disclosed.
S&S recognizes a temporal limitation.
Well, there isn't a temporal limitation in the disclosure requirement, and there are rules that say you should disclose something if within 2 years, such as if you were an investment advisor. But another point in terms of your question was to consider that if the arbitrators are not going to follow the rules, they are, and they procure an award or issue an award contrary to those rules, then they are acting beyond the scope of their authority. They were not engaged and authorized to act beyond their authority. That was a contractual arrangement they had. And when they refuse to do so and to act in accordance with the rules, then they act beyond their authority.
Even if it's trivial, remote, inconsequential?
Well, I don't think it's trivial or remote because the...
You can answer if you like.
I don't think it's trivial or remote because it's deemed material to the controversy. That's why FINRA requires the disclosures, and that's what Berghorst held. We request that you reverse and vacate.
Thank you.